Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Welcome back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Allen. Just met Weber on the board. SP futures down 1350. Dow futures down 114. NASDAQ futures down 46 after up yesterday. And Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. Happy Friday.
What's so happy about it?
All Fridays are happy.
Yes.
Especially when you had Thursday off.
Well, how did you, with all your different jobs, how did you get Thursday off?
Because we are between semesters, right?
You know,
summer term doesn't start till the beginning of June, so it's not that I didn't work yesterday. It's just that I could do it at pace.
Oh, you work from home is the new thing.
I did work from home. I sat out on my porch. It was a beautiful day, all set up. It was great.
Do you have a lot of students in the summer?
He has one student.
I will have. I will have about 40 students.
Well, that's not bad.
Over a few classes, yeah. Actually, what's kind of cool is I'm teaching one online class that has a pretty good enrollment, but the other two are relatively small, the two that I'm doing in person, and I want to rework them anyway. So, for instance, I have seven people in a principles of management class, and I want to sort of rework the course so they can be the guinea pigs. I think they'll be very happy with what it is. But when you have when you meet 3 hours twice a week, they the less they have to listen to me, the better. So each class is going to be, the first half is going to be a case, a project, you know, and we're going to work on that, and it's going to be based on the material from the class.
The Harvard School of Learning, case study, Harvard.
I always bring cases into the class anyway. What I'm trying to do is recruit some local businesses to bring their stuff into the class, you know, stuff that's real that they're working on now or that they want to work on, and they can get my students' input on it, which might help them. But otherwise, you know, I've been doing this a long time. I've seen a lot. I can write a case for anything, and I do write a lot of my own cases anyway.
What did Dr. Blade used to say?
It's always something that really happened, so I can tell them what I really did and what the outcome was, and was it good or bad. Because I always tell them, you know, I'm hoping I can at least save them from making most of the mistakes I made in the 80s and maybe some of the ones I made in the 90s, too.
What did Dr. Blade used to call kind of weird ducks in college, a hurting case?
Oh, explain that one for me.
No, he used to say, but it looks to me like a hurting case.
Oh, okay.
You know, I was going to ask you after Wednesday. I mean, there is obviously a correlation. There is, whether you intended to be or not, I think you did. The area in which you're teaching, for people maybe around the rest of the country that don't know, Chicago used to be this massive transportation supply hub of like everything. And, I mean, we had a gazillion truck docks, you know, which I worked at one, and railroads all came through here, blah, 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 blah. And a lot of that has moved out of the city. Some of it, I'm going to guess, was maybe Union. I don't know that. Some of it was some of the areas in which the trucking places were became, you know, pretty loaded up with people. Expressways got a little too jammed. Whatever the reasons, a lot of those have moved further out. And some have moved, actually, if you go on, it's a big deal in Joliet now. It's a big deal in northwestern Indiana. I guess my question, Kevin, is if you had the same school philosophy that you're taking there, and let's figure out what we need, let's figure out how do we match people up to And I'm sure a lot of what you're teaching is you know, it'd work in other subjects too, because which is a certain logic to do.
I teach universal truth.
Oh yes, yes, that's just what I was thinking. but I'm saying,
just stick with me, and you got it all.
Well, but I mean everything. I mean, that's why I always felt that, you know, somebody who took, say, wood shop, you know, in high school, it's a good, if you're going to go be a PhD in something, no matter what it is, it's still a good course, because everything progresses. You decide what you think what you need, you design what you think is going to work, you have the plan, you put it together, you do a drawing, essentially a plan, you know, you do a template, and then you make the final thing. But the steps of everything you do are kind of the same, right?
But sure.
But I'm saying,
define it, do it, and manage it. That's pretty much how you do things.
And what I'm saying is, if you all of a sudden get snagged for $1 billion and try to do the same thing in Chicago, I'm going to guess that the course content would be somewhat different, even though it would get people to the same place. I mean, you happen to be in an area that's growing like a weed when it comes to this delivery management. Cloud.
Yeah, to logistics, to warehouse management, warehousing, and to manufacturing, yes. That's what's growing here. But we also have, you know, I have counterparts in the healthcare side of the house that are dealing with some of the same things, because that's a growing industry as well.
Well, you guys were also the, where did Frank put the center of it, of the people who made, like, the fake knees, the replacement knees and hips and all that stuff? That's been a Michigan, Indiana.
Oh, yeah, Wakarusa, so just a little bit south of Elkhart County, next county south, and we have Zimmer Biomet and Dupuy, which are two of the biggest medical equipment manufacturers in the world.
So, I mean, I think about what you're teaching, obviously, no matter who you are, I mean, you could, even if you work for GM, the whole thing is inventory and supply management, really. I mean, that's why when I think of it, I don't want to beat up on them too much, because what's the point? The thing that's going on with Boeing is on a scale of incredibly bigger, exactly what we went through at Pullman. When we had ordered the stuff ordered, we had a schedule, and all of a sudden, the first car wasn't approved. We had all these change orders, and one change didn't took longer than we thought, and we couldn't get that part, and all of a sudden, the contract, the first car delivered, was, I'm going to say, 2 years late, something like that. It's hard to remember. Might have been 2.5 years late, to where all this stuff is just backing up. And you're asking people to slow down their production lines, which is screwing them over, and then they want money, and you don't have it yet. And it's you know, so just to say that Boeing, as big as they are, I calculated roughly $3 billion a month until they start delivering these cars, planes, to where they're producing 42 instead of 52 or whatever it is, or 42 instead of 57, and they're still pouring money into them. They're still paying people for seats and for wings and everything and engines, and they're not selling them. And you know, for 6 months for Boeing, I think is okay. They get tremendous credit rating. If it's 18 months, I don't know if anybody has enough money to have $60 billion piling up on you. I mean, plus it's a logistics nightmare. I mean, I was down counting seats in a funky old warehouse that Pullman sold to somebody and then leased back for like more than they sold it to them on a monthly basis, Kevin, because they had to put these seats in it. They had a couple of dead cats in some of the seats. There's rats around, like, get me out of here. Like, you know, that we had stuff everywhere. And we're talking about a railroad car versus a plane, and they're not even close. I mean, there's probably 100,000 parts in a railroad car, there's probably 1 million parts in a plane. And it's, you know, it's a factor of 10 at least. And probably more like a factor of, you know, 100. So, I mean, to say that this is not, they need a bazillion Kevins at Boeing right now is an understatement. Doesn't mean you shouldn't buy the stock or anything like that. I'm just saying it's a problem.
Well, also know that, you know, some of it is universal. Some of it is more universal. Some is less universal. So when you start thinking about supply chains, you know, I've had some HR managers, because, you know, when I say supply chain management to people, they think, what's that? You know? And then, you know, logistics, if you say logistics, people start to get it, but that's only part of it. And a lot, what really happens is I show them the curriculum, and then they say, oh, you mean operations management. And
no, it's
so
not same.
Now when you start getting into different industries and service industries as well, you know, I was an I was in operations management and banking for a long time. Most of that translates right into manufacturing. You know, it's still process. It's still and there's still some of the same management challenges. What it really gets down to, though, is that when you are teaching approaches to management, you know, I get really, really focused on production management rather than managing network engineers or software developers or those kinds of people who might have managed in the past, because the way you motivate is somewhat different. What's behind it and how you think through it is about the same, but you know, really, you may have especially if you're in retail business, as an example, and you've got somebody making $12 an hour, well, you know, depending on, you know, whether that person is a second income or a first income or an only income, you know, you're dealing with a totally different set of needs. And so if I tell you your reward is, hey, this is great, you know, I have a special project for you to work on because you do such good work, and they're going to say, don't complicate my life, I just want to get through to payday. You know, whereas, you know, if I do the same thing with a network engineer and I say, I'm going to turn you loose to just do some research for a couple of days because, then they're going to eagerly jump on that because that's what they do. That, you know, that's what they love.
But if you...
And so you have some different approaches in there, but basically, you know, team building is team building. You know, quality management is quality management. The concepts apply across the board. And that's why, you know, so I kind of jokingly say it's universal truth, but I try not to teach anybody anything that wouldn't be useful wherever they want to do, whatever they want to do.
But there's enough has changed, Kevin, to where, you know, everybody's, you know, chief guy, he thinks everything's back in the 60s. No, it's not. I mean, when my first real job was at Hi-Lo Foods, if I remember those guys, and a truck would show up. You'd unload the truck in the back room, and as time went by, you'd move the stuff out in the aisles as you needed it. So you handled everything pretty much two to three times. In the factory that I know of that started this just-in-time inventory was built that way. At the time, it was a revelation facility. It was the Chrysler plant Belvedere, if you remember back that far, Kevin. They were into this totally just-in-time inventory. So the way you cut costs and cut people out, but it's useless waste of people. If you had a car seat manufacturer, you had people that made the seats, and when you were done with them, you stuck them someplace, and then when somebody ordered them, you put them on a truck and you shipped them off, or a railroad car or whatever, to Joe's auto assembly plant. And those guys would take the seats and they'd put them in inventory and they'd use them when they needed them. And people at Chrysler, and probably people before, said, that ain't going to work. We want the people who make the seats to put them right on the truck, handle them once, the truck comes right here, they show up at 7 in the morning, maybe the day before, the truck pulls up to the gate, and we pull them right, or the door, we pull them right onto the line, and we use them that day, and we handle them twice, instead of twice at each spot. And when it works, Kevin, it's genius. But if all of a sudden you got a problem, now there's probably no inventory spot at either place, because why would you have one? You don't want one. That's the whole point, right?
And right, it is the point. It's called lean.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden now, instead of just having some pile up on the other end where you can say to literally thousands of suppliers, hey, hold off 2 months on this, and they're going to go, when you say hold off, you mean lay everybody off, because we got no place to put it. You want us to lay everybody off and bring everybody back like 5 months from now when you guys feel like buying again? Who's going to pay for all that? Now, every one of these contracts probably has some sort of a clause in there about who pays for that or who doesn't. I mean, Boeing's probably big enough to where they can spank the guy down the line, but maybe not. So, I mean, the enormity of the task is not something I would wish on anybody. I mean, this 737 thing, let's just hope they get it fixed, I guess is the bottom line. But
there's another piece into that too, and that's the the ethics of it, and that's part of any good leadership curriculum as well. In fact, you know, no trust, no leadership. That's kind of where it goes. So, that becomes a big piece of it too. And this is something I advocate. I've talked to a lot of businesses, and I advocate it with the students, but I advocate it with a lot of businesses. you know, in my world, because everybody says, how do we do ethics? Well, you know, well, we create an ethics manual. Oh, good. Good job. That's going to work. It absolutely does start at the top, but that's not even the point. The point of it is that it needs to be front and center in everything you do. And so everybody has team meetings, whether they're daily, whether they're weekly, you know, whatever it is, everybody has team meetings. And, you know, I think it isn't hard at all to come up with some everyday ethical challenges that people face all the time. And it's simple. Someone taking credit for someone else's work. What do you do? You see someone stealing something trivial from the office, you know, office supplies or something, taking home the kids, all the kids' notepads, for the full school year. You start getting into some of those really routine things that people say and say, what are you going to do? How are you going to deal with it? And start getting people thinking about it, because when it becomes a regular exercise and something you discuss as a team and something that, you know, you're not saying there's right answers all the time for everything. There may be multiple decent answers. There may be some obvious right answers. But when people are exercising that thought process all the time, then when the big stuff comes along, you have a better chance of getting it right.
I don't disagree. I have whenever anybody talks about this ethics, I almost cringe, because my grandmother used to tell me that people should know right from wrong by age 7. And then you contrast that with having to teach adults ethics, and I just wonder, where the bleep have we gone wrong somewhere?
Yeah, and see, I don't think you teach it. I think you discuss it. And that may seem to be a subtle difference, but or a difference without much distinction. But I do think when it's front and center, and when you get other people's point of views, because you're going to incorporate people. And we did this. I taught an ethics class. We were doing this every class. You know, you get some people who, you know, their meter is all over to, you know, just totally ignores the idea that you have to make a profit and we should be doing, you know, and that is not in their equation at all. And there's others that's, you know, that will take that point of view that if it's legal, then, you know, what's to stop us? Why shouldn't we? And that makes for some pretty good discussions. My point is that those points of view are out there in the world, and when you start to discuss them with your peers, maybe it starts to shape it in a better direction, but it certainly gives you a decent chance to get it right because you've started thinking that way. I always said this, raising teenagers, if you haven't discussed it with them beforehand, whatever the situation may be, if you don't discuss it with them beforehand, you got no chance of getting it right. At least if you have conversations about, you know, what do you do, when the booze comes out or the drugs come out or any of those kinds of things, what do you do? How do you save face? How do you get out of the situation? Then at least you have a fighting chance of getting it right. That doesn't mean right. You will, that they will, because they're teenagers. But you got no chance if they haven't thought it through. And I think that applies, that applies.
Yeah, but at that point, they're on the same page. They need to get the bleep out of there. You're just helping them how to do it with saving face. But if they didn't think they needed to get out of there, you could talk to them all day long about how to get out smoothly, and they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I it's funny. That's when people, the people who listen to the show, they probably think I go overly overboard on this stuff about people in the White House trading. And there's a reason for that, Kevin. I mean, I know I beat up on it too much. I get it, but... In my world, and I think in your world, and most of the people we went to school with, we were sort of the same kind of family grow-ups. You didn't even in sports, whatever it is, you always played hard, you may practice hard. That was your way of, quote, cheating. You worked harder. I mean, that was not, which is not cheating by definition. And even when I got to the trading floor, nobody that I traded with in our group and around me in the OEX really wanted that kind of an advantage on anybody else. Nobody really wanted to see the orders as they came in. I mean, plus it was policed. Hey, what are you looking at the orders for? That type of thing. And once in a while, you'd come across, you know, the first time I really ran across people, I'm going to say from the East, for lack of a better term, they went to the right prep schools and the right things. Their idea of right and wrong was totally different than mine. I mean, and that's why, I mean, to be perfectly blunt.
It's an entitled right and wrong.
It's an entitled right and wrong. I mean, you should get the earnings of AT&T before everybody else, because that's why you went to that boarding school, because you could meet Matt Weber, who's now the CFO of AT&T. He's your friend. That's why you went to that god-awful school and got your ass paddled or whatever happened to you when you were there. And that's why you went there and put up with it. So today you get the phone call and you and I don't, type of thing. And I'm going to say that if you found somebody like I'm accusing them of doing, either in China or in the last 2 days, we had an announcement out of China yesterday. When I did the show yesterday morning, when we did the show, was the Russell was down, not the Russell, the NASDAQ was down about 20 points right after the show. Somebody in China came out and said the talks are going pretty good, and all of a sudden we went up 100. We topped out 120 points higher than when we were at the show, doing the show. This is massive amounts of money, Kevin. This is 25, 30 points at an S&P future, $250 a point. We're talking almost $10,000 on a one lot. This is real cash. This is not play money. And I'm going to guess if you found some bleep either in China trading. Now today they say we're trying to pull all kinds of little tricks on them. And the trade talks, now they downplay the chances and we're down whatever, 20 or 15 points in this boost. Now, if you find the person in the White House whacking into his futures account or somebody over in China, they're going to say, what are you talking about? That's why I'm here. That's why I got this crummy job with you people yelling at me. They have a whole different view of what's right and wrong than you and I do. And there's people like that. And you know what? I can't stand them. And if they all went on a ship and the ship sunk, I wouldn't care, to be honest with you. That's how bad I feel about it. But I don't ever feel like I needed to be entitled like that. I never wanted to be. It's like I never wanted to go out and play softball against a team that we slaughtered in the fifth inning every game. It means we're in the wrong league, right? I mean, anyway, it's just me. And I know it
yeah,
comes
well, up. And that's also why I never like to bring in ringers.
Yeah.
You know, we're gonna win with my team or lose with my team. We're not gonna load up just because we're playing somebody tough. So there is a whole mentality there that kind of goes across the spectrum of what we do. But as Lou is real fond of saying, character matters, and character really matters when it comes to, you know, the really really challenging decisions that we all have to make. You have to be able to fall back on something. Some set of values, some way of thinking about these things, and that's, you know, that's when you, why it's, you know, it matters in politics. That was why the biggest reason our choice was so bad last time is because we had no character on display.
No, it was,
I don't see it. I don't see it in the upcoming election either.
No, I think there's some of the, well, some
I,
of the,
I just see it not on display times, what, 23, 24 now?
Well, there probably is some there, but it's overrun by lack of experience to the point where I don't even know if there's some there. Right? I mean, there probably is some somewhere. You can't accuse 25 people of being Hillary Clinton. Jeez, I hope there's not another person.
Well, that's true. Okay, but let's go to times 15 then, and then yeah. The others are too low in the polls to matter.
Well, that's, yeah, well, now. I mean, that's, who's to say that it won't be the first brokered convention. You know what? In our lifetime, everything else is happening. Kevin, maybe it's the first time that happens. And that would be kind of fun, wouldn't it?
It actually would be. So, yes, and I always do like to separate my politics from what I passionately believe and what I think makes good theater.
S&P futures down 12, Dow futures down 105, NASDAQ futures down 50. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howell, Mr. Matt Weber, Mr. Kevin O'Neill. S&P futures leaking pretty good here. We're leaking probably half to two-thirds of what we were up yesterday, so we're starting to see this like every day now. S&P futures down 18, now down 18, Nasdaq futures down 59. So they've gone down, we've doubled their depth down since we've been on the show. Dow futures down 130. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 117, that's 1%, so they're down again today. FTSE down 23.3%, CAC down 28.5. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei up 187. Oh, they were down yesterday, so they're kind of going different directions. Shanghai over down 73, it's 2.5%. That's a big ouch, because now that the trade tensions are back, after 24 hours on again, off again, it's like the old funky movie, she loves me not, for God's sake. Hang Seng down 328, 1.2. Oil is up another 64 cents, 63.51, so that's as high as it's been in a while. Ran up 47, 73.09. Natural gas, 264, so it's getting a little bit of a bid here. Arbob gas up to 208, ouch, on the Suburban. Gold down 29 cents, it was down more when we came in, 12.85. Silver down a nickel, 14.48. They still can't, nobody's moving to gold yet. Big news is Huawei is that and a bunch of other companies now are now on a blacklist. And we're going to talk to Kevin a little bit about what that may mean. Manny, what do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a very quiet start this morning on the area expressways, but we do have dark skies and rain in the forecast, so that could change quickly. But so far, no issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Same with the Eisenhower. Stevenson looking good. Southside expressways all quiet. Suburban tollways are looking good as well. No accidents to report on any of the expressways. Only accident that's in the area right now appears to be in the city, Lake Street, just east of I-294 at Ogden Avenue. There is a crash, but that's not really causing much delays as far as traffic is concerned. So enjoy a nice quiet start to your Friday morning. Weather today, it's a weird one. Yesterday, 75 and sunny, and then that storm moved in overnight, and it's bringing a cold front with it. We dipped down into the 50s and even the upper 40s at the lakefront today with a high of just 52. Then tomorrow, we're back up to 81. So it's a volatile weather situation, but today, kind of a miserable day. Overcast, some rain in the forecast. Nothing major like last night where there's hail and high winds, but still some precipitation and a high of 52. Right now it's cloudy and 51 degrees downtown with temperatures potentially dropping into the 40s. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 81 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 62. In sports, don't look now, Chief. The White Sox have won 4 out of 5 and are now just 2 games below 500. They doubled up the Blue Jays last night 4-2. Cubs dropped their second straight to Cincinnati, blowing a 2-0 lead. They've blown the lead in 2 straight games now in the later innings. This one sandwiched a 2-hour rain delay right in the middle.
Man, it was coming down there, wasn't it?
It was, and the Reds topped the Cubs 4-2, taking the series 2 out of 3. The Cubs had won or tied 10 straight series before losing 2 out of 3 to Cincinnati. Diamondbacks were off yesterday. They'll host the Giants tonight. And lastly, Chief, before we get our quick Preakness preview from Joel, the PGA Championship teed off yesterday, and Brooks Koepka shot a 7-under 63 in the opening round.
That guy's been right there at every one of these majors for about 2 years.
I think he's the best player in the world. Yeah. He has a 3-shot lead over Danny Lee after day one. Tommy Fleetwood is 3-under, 4 shots back.
Tommy Fleetwood looks too much like a rock star.
Other names of note, Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson are both 1-under, along with Phil Mickelson and Ricky Fowler. Those guys are 6 shots back already after day one, in spite of shooting under par. Tiger Woods is, looks like, what, 2 over?
It was 1 over, but he needs a good round today.
Yeah, he's pretty much toast unless he has a huge day. Yeah, he finished at 2 over. He's tied in 51st place, 9 shots back after one day behind Koepka.
That's, what do they say? You can't win it on the first day, but you sure can lose it.
Exactly right.
Do we have Joel?
Joel, good morning, Chief.
How are you? Why, after the fiasco in the Derby, I'm not as interested in this Preakness, but still, it's a tremendous thing, and wanted to have you on. Who's all running? First of all, out of the Derby,
well, you got 13 ponies in the race. First of all, and I have to agree on your sentiment about the race. I'm calling it the Bleakness instead of the Preakness. just been a bad 6 months for horse racing. You know, those 23 unexplained deaths at Santa Anita starting in December. They take down the winner of the Derby, and then, you know, Country House, who to me was an undeserving winner, he's not even competing in the race. So just it's really too bad. Horse racing was a little bit on the rebound with American Pharoah and Justify, and now it's now it's just right back. It's going to be really hard for horse racing to hold on once all this sports wagering goes into full effect. But I'm going to try and pick a winner here, as usual. I'll preface it by just looking at the horses that were the top contenders in the Derby. Improbable, Baffert Horse, he came in fourth in the Derby. He's probably going to get moved up. You know, he's probably going to be your early favorite. War of Will, he was a victim of the chaos in the stretch at the Derby. But, you know, if he would have had a clean trip, he possibly could have won the race. The other two Derby horses, Win-Win-Win and Boat Express, I don't know. It's hard to bet on that after those runs in the Derby. But you need a fresh colt, I think. That was a big race in the Kentucky Derby, the mile and a quarter. I'm going with Always Mining.
Really?
And not a great pedigree on the horse, nor has he beaten a lot of competitive horses. But what I like about him is he's hot. He's won six in a row, and his last win was by 11 horse lengths at Laurel Park. He's a front runner, which you need in the short and Preakness, and also he beat War of Will by a length and a half in a 7-furlong race back in December. So I'm hoping they don't bet him down. I hope I get some decent odds on him, but going with Always Mining, I hope to get him at like 8-10-1, and I'll pair him in some perfectas. I might throw in Probable and War of Will in with them, but that's my choice for the Preakness.
Joel, real quick, we've had periodic, the industry, has had periodic issues with various tracks and horses getting hurt. I mean, for a while it was the backstretch where do they run the Belmont? What's the big track?
Belmont Park.
Oh, where's the big track in New York?
There's Aqueduct, there's Belmont.
Belmont. But that's where Ruffian went down, right? Was at Belmont. I mean, there were an unusual number of horses going down on the back stretch at Belmont, and now Santa Anita seems to be the spot. When that happens, can you generalize? Is the track usually too soft, too hard? I mean, what's wrong when that happens? Because it happens periodically at a track someplace.
These are sensitive animals, Chief. I mean, there's a lot of inbreeding that's been going on for a long time in horse racing. There's not that many, stallions. So I think it's a combination of, the pedigree of these horses. They're very sensitive. And also, it does have something to do with tracks. There was bad weather out there in California. And, the track wasn't properly taken care of. So they're blaming on Lasix and the drug, but, the track surface, it's a serious thing and, very, very serious at Santa Anita. 23 horses. I mean, that's terrible. It's just been a bad year for horse racing and a combination of the weather and then just the breeding in these horses. They're not as strong or as healthy as they need to be. And the last thing on the Preakness, I hope the horse that crosses the finish line first turns out to be the actual winner.
Oh, that would be nice. That would be nice. Maybe the team with the most runs wins, something like that. Maybe I imagine that.
Yeah, back in the old days, that used to work.
Thanks, buddy. Talk to you on Tuesday.
Okay, go Blue.
Hey, Kevin, we're going to do a Paul Harvey page two real quick. For those that don't run up on the news right to this minute, the U.S. has put Huawei on this... they call it an entity list, meaning U.S. companies would need to obtain license to sell critical components, blah, blah, blah. And essentially, they're on the blacklist. They're on the double-secret probation list, and a bunch of other firms evidently went with them. Kevin, we've been trying to talk, on this show, and I was a guest on another show in Chicago for about an hour the other day, and all we talked about was the interconnection between these companies and how... I hope, and again, I assume that the people we have in charge get that it's not 1965 anymore. I mean, there's connections with this. I mean, I remember Milton Friedman answering a question about national debt, saying, "What's the difference? It just means your citizens own." It's like, if you owe your wife money, if you look at the house is still flat, right? What's the difference? And Milton Friedman answered the question and said, what's the difference if you have national debt when the citizens own the debt? Well, obviously, fast forward 40 years since he's been dead and other people own the debt. So obviously it's a different answer to that question, even though he was a brilliant man. Things change. Now my question to you is, you seem to know more about, if you were doing business with them, what exactly does that mean? Because you're always my go-to guy, but I got to add one more wrinkle to it. What does it do to their access to our legal system? Because my elves tell me they've got an awful lot of patents that are needed for this 5G. Now, if that's the case, do you and I just get to steal them? and then they have no status in the courts here, or how does that work? Or do we just fall behind forever until we take them off the crummy guy list? I mean, it seems to me there's a lot more going on here than just we don't like him anymore.
Well, first of all, it kind of locks them up, and you know, Huawei says, "Well, we'll get through it, we'll survive it. That won't be, you know, we'll be able to do it." Now, that may be false bravado, but it's a pretty significant step. It's also a big hit to U.S. suppliers, because Huawei does buy a lot of its parts from U.S. manufacturers. So we are definitely looking at a hit there, and I don't know how that's going to shake out. But I do think it is definitely up the ante a touch in the negotiations, and I'm sure that's the whole point. The question is, and that's, you know, we got up and connected on we're connecting on a roundhouse now. Will that work? And you know, we talked about this Wednesday. I remember I said, you know, it's kind of, you need to step back and just look at, you know, whether you agree with the moves or not. What's the posture here from a negotiating standpoint? What are they trying to accomplish? And you know, I think this is intended to be that. You know, I think this is the best shot that the Trump administration is trying to take right now. That says get back to the table and do this seriously. I don't know what's going to happen if they don't. You know, well, because I don't see a lot of wiggle room at this point.
In my industry and what I do for a living, which is give people advice and manage money for people. What do you do if you put yourself in my chair here, and all of a sudden at 8:01 after the show, a client or would-be client calls up and says, in this fight back and forth, and we're picking on their essentially biggest firm, what do I do with my Apple? Kevin, I don't know what to tell them. Honestly, I don't know what to tell them.
Yeah, I don't either. And, you know, so, you know, are we at the walk away? What happens if we have a walk away moment here where we say, okay, no deal, let's move on? What do you do next?
Well, that's what,
do you relax that to bail out your, you know, the U.S. companies who are suppliers to Huawei, or are you just saying status quo, we'll figure it out?
Well, this is what happens.
Adapt.
This is what happens, Kevin, and I got to dig into the politics a little bit, unfortunately, is when you educate people, some of which, I don't want to go out on a limb here, maybe aren't so educated, when you think of this focus on this table and this Trump against these guys, and our guy's a tough guy and he's making threats and he's being, you know, he's being the guy in the neighborhood, you know, simple fact is, Kevin, there's a bazillion transactions going back and forth between us and China as we talk on this show. This is not a chessboard kind of thing. This is not a deal. There's no way we're going to live without Chinese goods, and we're not going to live without Chinese investment in our currencies. We're too tight. It's been going on too long. I mean, I'm not saying they don't do business the way we wouldn't like them to do business in a lot of ways, and a lot of that could change, should change. And I don't have a problem putting pressure on them to make a change. But at the end of the day, the idea that there's, quote, no deal, what does that mean? There's no commerce between us and China, and the next Treasury auction, Rick Santelli gets on TV and talks about there's not a Chinese nickel that's going to show up, and they're going to, next time we roll T-bills, they're going to want a check. I mean, I can't imagine that happening, Kevin. So I just
wish, no, I don't think there's anybody who thinks it's going to be that way.
But I mean,
there will be a deal. It's just going to be under what rules. And you know, what we're saying right now is we don't like the rules, so
but you're sort of missing my point. Is we've dumbed down the enormity of what goes on between these two countries into this, quote, deal. And Kevin, that first of all, it's very self-serving on the part of the administration, I think, or anybody. It's not, you know, it is not that simple. It's not even remotely that simple. I mean, there's no way that we're not going to, even if we put 50 of their companies on the bleep list, that those companies aren't going to sell to Korea because we need the stuff and we're going to buy it from Korea or Thailand. This the enormity, out of all the classes I've ever took, the one that I felt like I was barely scratching the surface is international commerce and trade flows and money flows. And I've grown tremendously in knowledge in that area, and I still think I'm scratching the surface. So the idea that the average dodo in this country, including me, is talking about the president and this guy making a deal that's all of a sudden going to solve all this commerce. I mean, whether we're, does anybody think we're not going to do business with these people no matter what happens? There are a million deals being made between us and China as we talk. You know, I'm saying I don't like the fact that you dump things down to this level for people. I just don't. I mean, I'm to the point where I don't even know what the definition of a deal is here anymore. Do you?
excuse me. I'm not sure I ever knew what the definition of a deal was, other than, you know, there is stuff that needs to be cleaned up.
I do too.
We both agree on that. That's not even.
I would agree.
That's not even controversial. But yeah, there's tons of moving parts here, and it isn't just a Huawei thing. It isn't just a few industries. It isn't just trade secrets. It's all of it, and that's what needs to go into a deal. Now, whether we can do that as a bunch of little deals or not, I don't know.
Well, I don't know that it's wrong or right, Kevin, but and you'll never know, you know, back in the day whether, you know, if some different move at Pearl Harbor would have made a difference or not. You can always criticize, you know, the rear window is always very clear. I think if we were going to go down this road, we should have, my style would have been, and again, this could have been, my style would have been to have left the Trans-Pacific Agreement in place that allegedly, again, I didn't read it, covered a lot of this stuff. And then when we fought with China, the fight was to be for you guys to qualify for that deal and do all this stuff in a, you know, fight about the rights and all the intellectual property. Is the reason why you're not invited in is because you're doing all this bad crap. But leave the framework in place. Now, to start all over on the framework, although they're probably not starting all over, I would guess, the different people to think. I mean, to start all over on the whole mass of things, I think was a tactical mistake. Because if we try and force them, we have that thing around us like, look, there's 50 other people that are agreeing to this stuff, and you're the only guys that are being idiots. Now it just seems like our guy and their guy kind of slugging out in the middle of the ring. And I don't know where that get. I think the other framework would have been better, because I think it seems to me in the last 20 years, the things that successfully work out worldwide is the more people you got on your side. Seems to me. That's the conclusion I'm coming to. And right now it seems like us against China, but it isn't really, because everybody else is involved in this. And we had an agreement with all the other people. Why not use that, I guess, is my question. I don't know the answer. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that agreement was no good and he was right to throw that out. I don't know, Kevin. I mean, it seems to me that puts you in a stronger spot. I don't, you know, what do you think? Am I totally all wet on this?
Well, I don't know one way or the other. I will say this much. If something gets done in the next month, this will have looked like a brilliant move.
Yeah, but we're letting these people...
If nothing gets done... Now, I know, you want a different approach to the whole process, and I get that you're advocating that. I'm not expert enough, really, to
I am,
to
I'm
comment
not either.
On that.
I'm not either.
I really am not, and so I don't want to get into it too much, because I'll just say something stupid.
Well, but when you say, though, there is a deal, what I'm saying is, given the enormity of what I think is going on, the fact that there's a, quote, deal or no deal that these two idiots get up and say, what does that even mean, Kevin? Is there really one or not, or we got to do something by the election? I mean, this guy did nothing but rip John Kerry with the Iran deal because Kerry was desperate to get one, and he said we had a deal, and this guy's done nothing but pour crap on the guy for the 2.5 years he's been there about what a horrible deal it was. Now, is the next guy going to be the next Trump? And come in and say this Trump did nothing but take a deal that was horrible just so he could run again. I mean, he set himself up for being the 2020 Kerry, right?
Well, maybe.
You know,
maybe he's going to be the 2020 hero who got us a great trade agreement with China and you know has Iran on the ropes or Iran. I don't know what to say about Iran. That's a different discussion.
It's sort of the same thing, though.
He could wind up looking, looking smarter than everybody else. I'm not discounting that possibility.
Well, sure. But I'm saying is, who even knows what the old deal was, what the middle deal was, and the new deal was that they'll say is the best thing on earth? Does anybody really know if the new NAFTA deal is better than the old one?
No, I would imagine that it is somewhat better. At least, it's updated, so you know that part of it has to be worthwhile.
Yeah, well, I would think it's a lot. Actually, I would think it's a lot better.
The fact that 20 years later it's been brought up to date, even if it's not significantly different or significantly better, it has to be significantly different.
Plus, I like the guy with the wacky name.
Our economies are different.
I think our lead negotiator is a really good guy. The guy that got the long name, Hurst Weiser, whatever his name is. I think
so. I guess I'm, you know, kind of tap dancing around the answer here because I don't really have a good one for you, other than to say, you know, look, my problem all along with the Iran deal was we never had a walkaway position on that. So I think Iran did, and as a result, we were so desperate to have a deal. And this, you know, this is kind of, I just got done teaching a purchasing class, and we talk about deals. And one of the things I said is, if you don't have a walkaway and you're not willing to stick with it, then you're going to get stuck with a bad deal.
Well, but Kevin,
did I ever read the whole Iran agreement? No, I'm not sure anybody. Was it publicly released? I don't think it was. But with the, you know, my point of it is that part of negotiation has to be a factor, and you know, I don't think it was. So when I start looking at some of these deals, I don't have access to the content, but I do have access to, or the ability to observe the process. And if I think the process is bad, then it is very likely to have left us with a bad deal.
But Kevin, it's when you look at deals, I can't. There's nothing I can possibly, and the listeners, I think, know where I'm coming from. You can't define the deal that you see as good or bad when you don't know the purpose of it. I mean, if you look back, I'm going to say that the SALT One deal, if you looked at it and you looked at the inspection capability, which was like none, if you looked at the whole process, you're going to say that that was a horse bleep deal on our part. Yet, at the time, we were, you know, we damn near were fighting these guys in Cuban places. The idea that we could talk and at least get in a room and say, there's some limit to this nuclear crap that we don't have to go further. And we're going to cut back in at least these one areas. And there'll be people that will tell you that the missiles that we pulled out of in the SALT One deal on both sides were so old. If you tried to blow them up, they'd blow up in the silo. I mean, I read all that kind of stuff when that first happened, when I was way younger. And it, you know, and as a quote deal, it was useless. Yet what it did was, is it got people talking. It did something. It lowered the amount of nuclear weapons, at least on paper, made people feel a little better, and oh, by the way, pushed the relationship out another 5 or 10 years to where we thought Russia may not last that long anyway, the way they were set up politically, and it gained us 10 years, and then all of a sudden
and that's fine, and that, you know, you could be absolutely right with that. What was different about Iran's behavior after the deal?
I'm not sure. Depending on who you talked about. Now, are they more desperate afterward because they're closer to getting thrown out than Gorbachev was? I don't know. They've got that thing with them because they're not that popular in their own country. That's what makes them pretty darn dangerous, in my opinion.
Well, it does. But what I'm saying is, you know, were they still involved in Syria and working against our interests?
But that was never.
Were they? You know,
okay. But
I mean, you can go down the laundry list.
All right,
was there
anything
that was improved about Iran's behavior internationally as a result of that deal? And I would say the answer.
Okay,
to that
but right, what, my, what, I'm, what I'll push back on and say, just like the Russia deal, SALT One had nothing to do with Russia being generally bad guys and messing around with other people around the rest of the world and screwing around in Czechoslovakia and all the other places. It had nothing to do with that. It was a first start on old nuclear weapons that both of us could essentially get rid of.
Did Iran stop working on?
I'm going to say that the stuff the deal specifically addressed, not the general no goodniks of the guy, which they are. I'm going to say that it probably helped in that area. Because our own inspections, is when Trump pulled the deal out, the people in our allies said, our own inspections have gone fine. That the stuff the deal addressed, and again, I don't know that much. The stuff the deal addressed, now you and I really would say, well, so what? These people are still idiots. They're still causing trouble other places. That's not what it addressed.
Okay. Well, or, you know, did we stop development in their in Iran?
Our allies
could technically be in compliance and still have issues of did the deal do what was advertised?
I think
maybe those are two different questions.
Well, maybe it was advertised. I think SALT One was advertised a lot bigger than it was. That's just politics. But I don't think Kerry ever dreamed that he got these guys to not be idiots anymore. I don't think he ever thought he went down that road.
I don't know. He was patting himself on the back pretty much.
Okay, but what I'm saying, they are specific things. Now, that's why I think we can probably come up with a deal, no matter what we do with China, no matter what is on a piece of paper, it's not going to stop these guys from stealing every new invention we have here. Duh. And especially if we let them come over here.
What I would hope it does is that it specifies enforcement that has some teeth.
Well, okay.
Whether it would do that or not, I don't know. But right now, we're pretty toothless when it comes to enforcement.
Now, what do we do if, in fact, my elves are correct and Huawei's got all these patents? Can we cancel them? Can we give them no access to courts? I have no idea how that works. Do you?
Well, yeah. In some cases, it's just that they're really what the deal is saying is they don't have access to their suppliers.
Okay, but what about...
There will be exceptions. There will be all kinds of exceptions. Remember, all they're doing on this list is they have to go through the government to get to be able to do the deal.
Right, so does...
buy their stuff. So, you know, we will be able to turn up the heat or turn down the heat as necessary.
That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking you if Kevin and Webby Inc. can now blatantly steal their 5G patents and start producing over here stuff that...
I would like to think not, because that's the whole point of all this anyway, is to stop stealing each other's stuff. I would like to think not.
I bet we have people in this country acting like Maddie's dog Venkman and licking their chops. I'm thinking.
I don't want to know about that. I'm getting bad mental images.
Yeah, I have people sitting there going, wait a minute, these things are up for grabs?
Because I don't know that dogs lick their chops as much as, never mind.
Yes. Yes, well, you know what they say.
They can.
Yes, because they can. Anyway, so I mean, I love definitions of all this, because I will say one thing about, I was talking to my extremely right-wing buddy Robert last night, and I said, you know, this guy, one of two things is going to happen, and I don't know which is, I have a suspicion, but maybe it's just my negativity a little bit these days. A lot of the stuff this guy has brought up, and basically ripped the scabs off a lot of things, it's either going to end up being, you know, almost the end of us, because we break apart so much that we can't ever get back together, or it's going to be things that are open for debate that probably should have been open for debate 25 years ago, and maybe we figure out a way to get together and hammer out some of the stuff we should have been hammering out before. And I sure hope that it's choice two. But I don't know if I'm that confident about it, Kevin. I
think we're going to have to bottom out somehow. Whatever bottom out means.
You know who you
first.
You know who you remind me of with that statement? And you didn't even marry her. Who married? Wasn't the Eisenhower kid? Who married the other Nixon daughter?
I definitely did not marry one of the Nixon daughters.
But he's a big time Republican think tank guy, and I still have it up here in the office somewhere. He wrote this thing, and he said we're not going to get any. Any issue resolved until we bottom out. But now, the thing of it is, Kevin, is the more I read history, I read the glorious stuff about World War II and this and that, the more I go back, and now I'm really digging in some stuff, you know, the Depression, what were people like, what were these areas like, what were people's politics like, and you go back to some of the battles of World War II, especially in the Pacific, you know, and what if the carriers would have, been there at Pearl Harbor? I think we would have had a peace with Japan and said, you guys go this far and that's it. I don't think we even would have fought them almost. I'm not sure about that, but if the carriers would have been there and those idiots that were in Washington would have declared war 20 minutes before they dropped the bombs, I'm not sure there wouldn't have been a peace like in Vietnam. Okay, you guys got this much, just keep it. We're not going to bother you. I mean, we've bottomed out a few times before in this country, and we came very, very close to losing the most incredible thing that's ever been devised on Earth, which is this country. And I'm not so sure that I want to take that chance again, but I think you're right. I mean, in this guy who wrote this article, the guy's Mr. Right-Wing Conservative. Kevin, there wasn't a word in there I could dispute. Not one. I just, the only difference is, I don't know how you define bottoming out right now. Do you? People shooting each other?
Yeah, I don't, and that's why I said, bottoming out, whatever that is. I hope it isn't too severe.
I hope it's not guns. I mean, we're not that far away. We are not that far away. And
well, guess what? Try and take them all. Well, now I'm opening a different can of worms. Try and take them all away and see what happens.
Well, I don't see how. I mean, you know, I'm exceptionally anti-gun, but I'll tell you this: how do you possibly tell the next guy he can't get a gun when there's 90 bazillion of them out there? I mean, how do you? You don't.
And in fact, that's, you know, Australia is dealing with that right now. They did a confiscation program. Well, they have more gun violence now than they had before it.
Well, it's the idea that we have. I think we have our issues, Kevin, and I don't know how much. Hopefully, you're not seeing much because you're seeing the people. And I actually think that the area you are. I mean, we had this debate last week. You and I came as close as we had to an argument. But I think this is not on the show, but I think a lot of really bad stuff is happening in rural America. A lot of desperation, a lot of stuff, and I think our friend Dr. Johnson would definitely side with me on this. That there's some areas in this country, some areas that you drive by and don't even see. I mean, what's his name? Carl was saying that he drove Maddie a couple of months ago, and he specifically stayed off the interstate. Said he went through some little towns that looked like stuff was happening good, and he went through some that, what the hell? I mean, I think we have real pockets of despair, drugs. I mean, people thinking their life is worth nothing. I mean, somehow we have to.
Well, I think you're right, Tom, and I won't argue that isn't happening. What I think you're missing, though, when you talk about that, is that there are also some really, really good things going on, and they're happening away from major cities.
I would agree with that.
And you know, that's really my point, is that the smaller cities are nimble enough to reinvent themselves, to really come up with new ways, new different ways of approaching what they, you know, how governance works and what the partnership is with governance and private sectors. And I just think there's so much happening that's kind of cool, and it's underreported because we tend to like to report the bad stuff. But if you go seek it out, and I sent you some links about that I thought were worthwhile, and tweet them out again. I think I did tweet them.
We might as well talk about it here. And here's my issue with the Kevin on this one is, first of all, in your area, I agree with you 100%. Not just in your town. So you and I were fighting about that. But I'm saying, look at the economic landscape in this area. You guys have, let's say you guys, let's just say Indiana, Michigan, because of the demise of Chicago and Illinois, which is exactly what I describe it. There's a pocket downtown here where it looks like Boston or San Francisco that's basically going great guns. And if you rip that pocket down, there's some places along the tollway corridors where they have a lot of new investment and new people out there. There's some pockets here, but by and large, Illinois as a state is going down a rat hole. And a lot of the industries that were Chicago's are moving your way. So if you're a place in Indiana or Michigan and you get your act together, like you are part of people doing there, and I'll congratulate you for that, you can actually make some serious progress, and you are. But you got a couple of things going for it. Doesn't make you bad. I mean, it doesn't make it, but I think if you went, say, middle Wisconsin, where Janesville lost the GM plant, if you went to northern New York for like 30 years, I mean, I agree with you now that they're finally making some strides. But God, John Dyer, who's been a guy on the show, his company is in Syracuse, he said the place was a hellhole for like two decades. There's nothing up there. And if you put 50 people at work, yes, it's progress, but it's a pimp on the ass of an elephant. I mean, there are areas, Kevin, that don't have this, a state next to them falling apart, shoving them stuff. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying that
yes, Tom, but that does not explain then if you're talking about, you know, and I sent a whole list of these. You know, when you're talking about a McPherson, Kansas, or Bennettsville, South Carolina, these small cities, Newton, Iowa, Williston in North Dakota, you know, Lexington and Park, Maryland, they aren't Chicago. They aren't getting Chicago relocation.
I think there's dramatic stuff, but I'm saying on the level that we need tax wise and everything. And by the way, I know the journey of a million miles starts with the first step. I get it. And nobody is more when you. I say good things about you when you're not here. I don't have to do it when you're here, right?
Okay, definitely don't.
No, but my point
I
is.
I should probably start doing that too. I should start saying good things about you when you're not.
Yeah,
here,
yeah.
Because I always say bad things about you when you're not here. But
I'm saying that what we need, we the country need, that 95, 96 million people that somehow found their way out of anything. Now some of those are students and everything, so it's not. And the number used to be 75. We have to get that number down under 90, down under 85. So the percentages of people working and doing something, contributing, rather than a lot of these arguments about how much taxes are people paying to people that aren't working, a lot of these arguments we're having would go away if that happens. So if somehow or another, the magic you guys are doing there, you could figure out a way to get northern Wisconsin out of the meth heads and New Hampshire out of the heroin. If you could expand that somehow, or all of a sudden next year at this time I go, holy bleep, Batman, this number is not 96 anymore. It's 93 or 92. Then all of a sudden, a lot of these other issues that we're fighting about, I think, go away. So it has to be brought to the masses a little bit, is all I'm saying. I'm just ahead of you a little bit on the numbers. I guess that's the only thing we're arguing about.
Yeah, I just think that, you have to start building, and, the way that the state of Indiana articulates it so well is what you're doing is you're creating pathways into the middle class for people who aren't there now. You're creating the kinds of jobs that people can do that pay very well, and that, so then if you want to own a home, if you want to have a nice car, you want to have reliable transportation, you want to have those things, that you can afford that. We're not talking about making people, rich. That's a whole different sector of the conversation.
Yep.
But they're really saying is what they're working to do is attract industries, and then that cascades to me through the educational system is a mandate to train people for certain types of work, and to identify those. And what's good about, when you're talking about supply chain stuff, what's good about that is that as you start to reach down to the high school level, the idea that the traditional liberal education, I mean that as a liberal arts style education, not left-wing education, that traditional liberal education doesn't fit everybody. Not everybody is humanities oriented, and you can figure that out pretty early in a kid's academic career, so that you can start putting people on a track to do what they really like to do. And then if you have people who are maybe more humanities oriented, then maybe their track is into healthcare, or maybe their track is into more traditional humanities field.
Well, I think
it's identifying it rather than trying to force people down a path, and then they get to the end of it and say, "Well, now what?"
Well, I think a lot of what your progression of progress. The first thing you're going to do, Kevin, if I'm an Indiana guy, I don't hate to beat this up some more. If you're an Indiana guy, you're going to reach back, and you're just like Chicago. I'm going to reach back and I'm going to say, well, what do I got? Well, geez, we got this I&M Canal. Everybody's grain's going to come through here. Hey, let's have a Board of Trade open the same day. Duh. I mean, you think back in Indiana, Michigan. Let me get this straight. One of the first toll roads in the country was the Indiana Toll Road, because everybody getting from the west to the east has to come through here. Everybody, if it's kind of in the middle. When I was my first field trip at, when I was working for Allied Van Lines, was back in the day. Remember, they used to call them Watts lines? Back in when if you had a Watts line, it was like $1,000 a month.
I remember Watts lines. Yes, you had to get a band. You had to request a band.
Yeah,
band three.
Well, Allied Van Lines had
a certain distance away.
Yeah, Allied Van Lines had something like 25 outgoing Watts and 30 inbound, because all these truckers all over the country, they weren't going to pay for the phone calls, because in those days, a long distance phone call is what, $8 or $9, Matty Weber, imagine that. People didn't have $8 or $9. Well, if you looked at the spot in the middle of the country, everybody had their communications center in Omaha, because there was a SAC base out there, so there was massive amounts of lines, and you were basically dead center in the middle of the country.
So I went out there to approve some new, you know, huge switching mechanism. Kevin, I'm driving down this block. There had to be 50 of these places. Where countries had these little pillboxes, these little concrete places that were air-conditioned or whatever, with an office, and the back of it was just racks and racks of phone crap. And, okay, so Omaha at the time sits there and go, hey, guess what? We got all this. How about opening up this area for all these people to come out here? Look at the amount of people that are going to be, you know, and hiring here, and look at the infrastructure. I'm saying is you guys at least had something, you guys, people in the Midwest had something to start with. I don't know that Northern New York has anything really to start with. I don't know that Northern Wisconsin, it's a tougher problem is all I'm saying. It's the only
thing. It is a tougher problem, but it's not as tough today. I mean, you know, for things that have to be, you know, physically transported, yeah, if you're kind of in the middle of the Catskills, that might be an issue, but when you are now, you can do, you know, technology. I mean, you've got places like, you know, Battle Creek, that even though it's right there on I-94, they're becoming a tech hub, and Jackson, Michigan's becoming an engineering hub.
Right, I agree.
Because, you know, partly because of access to University of Michigan
talent.
Which New York certainly has all over the state. Right. They have outstanding universities. But also partly because somebody's visionary enough to say, okay, let's pursue something here. Let's put together, you know, let's organize ourselves around some ideas. And that's, you know, that's what I don't see happening very well in Chicago.
I'm going to say that if the Chicago junior colleges were anywhere near as aggressive as you guys are, that we would be saving, you know, 10,000 of the people who are leaving every year, or 5,000. Doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a start. I mean, I agree with you on that. And, you know, it doesn't seem like we are. I don't, I mean, we don't see, we can't get off. All we worry about is the next tax because we got to pay somebody somewhere. I mean, we aren't even focused.
Yeah, so where, you know, how are we going to dip in? And it is kind of a death spiral because you tax more people, people leave, which means you have to tax more.
Right.
To make up for it.
And I think our people need to know that that's a zero-sum game. I mean, when I had the who was the guy? He was the head of the teacher's pension fund. The one guy that didn't like me. It was probably the only two. I won't say didn't like. Who the hell knows if people like you or not? But he was like, I said, you mean? So let me get this straight. If the last man standing in the state, you better have a lot of money. Everybody else leaves. The guy goes, well, yeah, because we have our deal and we get to tax people and just so we get our checks. Basically, I mean, he didn't say it that grossly, but damn near. And I'm like, wow. I mean,
well, I think if you get to be the, if you can hold out long enough to be one of the last ones standing, you can probably just own the state.
Well, sometimes owning something isn't a good thing, depending on what you're owning.
No, but you know, somehow or another, you can. Once you're the last one there, you can have your own constitutional convention, and all of this can be fixed.
Well, that's the truth. I mean, but I mean, again, I don't
hold out to be one of the final, you know, the last 10, Tom. You'll be all set.
Well, Kevin, I still got these S&P futures down 21. I got Nasdaq down 73. So we're giving up. We're virtually exactly where we were yesterday. This giving up whatever we did the day before, up or down every day. Whatever. It's actually pretty good for me trading wise. So that part's good, but I honestly don't know, Kevin, the biggest thing, because I have this one group I'm working with now. There's a lot of people there that have Apple stock. And I honestly, I've never been as much in a fog. I've never seen a stock of this value caught in the crosshairs of this kind of fight between two countries. And I honestly have no idea what to tell people. I mean, are they going to, I can't imagine, again, but this is one person's opinion. I can't imagine, given the amount of people that Apple hires over there, that China's going to turn on these guys. But how do I know that? That opinion, what if I actually feel that way and tell some guy not to sell his Apple and tomorrow it's $50, which I don't, I mean, I just have no way to have an opinion here. Zero.
Well, and I know how all of this stuff affects Apple, but I have a different question with Apple. Is it the same innovation company now that it always has been?
I'm going to say no.
It may be. Maybe they'll come out with the big next breakthrough, but you know that may have required Steve Jobs to do it.
Yeah. Well, right now they're big growth. Well,
are their products really innovative anymore? I don't know. Is an Apple Watch innovative, or is it? You know, what's next? What's coming out of there that's going to be the breakthrough? Because if it isn't, then they're going to move into cash cow mode anyway.
Well, the two people, I'll ask you and Maddie, you know more about this than I do. There were two guys on the CNBC talking about the Apple earnings last time, and obviously the phone is down from a year ago, but the services are up, and essentially the one guy says they're not services, they're not Hewlett Packard or IBM. They make the computers in this one section, and everybody knows that business is going downhill. And they've managed to go and get these massive consulting contracts where if you're putting in a new air traffic facility, I mean, IBM is going to manage the project, or Hewlett Packard is going to manage the project, and the project's worth, you know, $80 million or some massive number. And so many equipment's going to be IBM's and other people. I mean, that's my definition in that area of, quote, services. Right now, it's maybe not everybody's or whatever. I don't know if it's yours, but that to me, when you talk about a technology company having services, that's what that means, in my opinion. Now, what one guy was saying, Apple is all it is, they're starting to charge you for using various of the apps that are on the phone. He goes, it's not a service, it's a tax on people that are using it, and maybe now next year to use this on the phone instead of being free is $1 a month or half. I mean, I don't have an Apple phone, but there's some of that starting to happen. And then that's what they're calling services, because it's really not a service, it's a fee that people may decide they don't want to pay after a while. I mean,
yeah, well, and Apple is, you know, I seem to recall that they recently raised their prices, because what they have is software developers pay Apple every time, they pay Apple to be in the iStore.
Yeah.
And then every time someone buys one of those apps that cost $1 or $3 or something like that for perpetual use, Apple just raised raised its percentage of what it's taken out of that.
Okay, hey, Kevin,
they're looking at places for revenue growth that are not long term growth. They're just not organic growth.
Well, that's what the one detractor guy was saying. So. Hey, real quick, I remember, I'm trying to read this, more of this, Huawei thing while we're talking. Multitasking or double tasking or something. You mentioned when you were at Better World Books that a lot of times you bought software from people or you bought software or hardware for that matter. And in the contract for it was that this couldn't be shipped overseas or something, correct?
Correct. You had to declare whether you were going to, and that would trigger a review if you were sending stuff overseas.
Did you ever have a supplier, one way or the other, that all of a sudden was on this, you know, crap list, for lack of a better term, where all of a sudden you had to stop using?
No, never did. No. Yeah, I was generally buying from places like Dell, Cisco, outfits like that.
What...
Or subscription software, which was a whole different animal.
So, but I mean, I guess you could get in a situation where your supplier was Dell, and Dell is impacted, and all of a sudden Dell says, I can't supply you anymore. I mean, right?
Well, if Dell were impacted by this, though, that's probably not what would happen. What Dell would be saying is, hey, you want to buy some more stuff?
Yeah, well...
I can't sell it to China, Chinese companies anymore.
Who would you say the big... Because that's what they were talking about yesterday, is the people that supply these guys. The stocks were all down yesterday. Who are their biggest suppliers? I mean, people that make the switching equipment, those kinds of things. I mean, these guys, just to go from the beginning here... Most of China is never going to be wired, right? Everything is essentially cellular, correct?
Good question. Don't know.
Okay, I think that they're not even attempting. Maddie, I think I'm right on that.
Yeah, are they bypassing the older technology and just leaping into the...
Yeah, I mean, if you're in a rural area in China, I don't think you're ever going to get a landline to your house. I mean, why would you, I guess? Well, I guess you need it if you're going to have... Now, is this 5G, is this going to allow people to get basically internet serious, through your phone like you would be able to get through a desktop? Is that...
Well, you can already do a hotspot and get pretty good response via your phone.
Okay.
Or you can buy a standalone hotspot that uses cellular. I have one that, I buy minutes for it. I buy service when I need it, and I may go months without needing it. So, you know, there's lots of ways you can do that. But, you know, will it be TV quality? Yes, eventually it will be. You know, your cell service will be a viable substitute for, you know, for your cable internet or cable-based internet or anything else that that you do. You'll be getting your YouTube TV over over your hotspot.
Why? I guess I have a question. Why do we need that if you already got the other in place? I'm not saying that you should, you know, if you didn't have the other in place, that you shouldn't have it, but why would I want to pay for that in two spots?
You wouldn't. You only pay for it in one.
So in other words, the landline's already there. Why wouldn't I just use it? Or are we going to get rid of them?
Well, right now you're paying for it in two spots, right? You're buying your cell service, and you're paying for whatever comes into your home.
I just use my phone for phone. And text.
Okay, well, then you can continue on the status quo, and nobody's going to make you go away.
I mean, I technically have a smartphone, but that doesn't make me smart enough to know how to use it and even care about using it when I can have them sit in front of a computer all day anyway. I'd rather use my three big screens here than look at that little thing. Just saying.
Yeah, but, you know, we're looking down the road before all of this comes in, but it will be, and what that means then is that your computing service follows you wherever you go. And you don't have to worry about whether whether the hotel has, Wi-Fi for you to get in there. And of course, hotels are notorious for having been hacked and, you know, good place to catch viruses and malware of various sorts. There's some good reasons that you might want to do that. And, you know, if not, stick with what you have.
When our buddy Dr. J tells me he sat next to a guy on a plane, and every time somebody went on their computer and used the Wi-Fi, he showed Dr. J their password. Why would I ever want to use a Wi-Fi? I never have. Why would I want to?
That's why I own a hotspot. Because I can control it.
Really? So do you think you can control it? You have to explain that to us next time you're on. How do you get to control that?
It's just a device. It's just a receiving device.
Well, how's that not just another Wi-Fi?
Well, it's cellular service that gets me internet.
Okay.
So it's like using your phone for a hotspot, which you can do if you want, or you can just own a hotspot, which I do, and it does nothing but create connection for you to the internet.
I see. All right, Kevin. Well, thank you very much, buddy, for hanging on. SP Futures now on 22.75. NASDAQ Futures on 81. This is like the mirror image of last night's close. This is crazy stuff. We come back with Mr. John Neal. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber, S&P Futures. Let me put it to you this way. Yesterday, we were down a little bit, and all of a sudden China said the talks were moving ahead, and we just turned around and flew up like a scalded cat. So we're up 100 and some NASDAQ points. We closed like up 80, and with the Dow up about, or the S&P's up, say, 20. Now today, China accuses U.S. of bullying behavior. S&P futures down 24, NASDAQ down 87. Maddie, do you think? Do you think somebody thinks they're trade? Whatever. I can't.
It shows me that the market is just one big facade. If news can just move it one way or the other, it's like there's no one involved.
There's not.
I don't trust it at all. I'm starting to think it's not a real thing.
Well, you wouldn't want a standing order anywhere. Let's put it that way.
I'm amazed that a headline can just move the market so easily. It's scary.
Well, whether you have trade moving forward or backward, with your biggest trading partner is sort of a big deal. I mean, these guys have worked this like there's no tomorrow. I don't think a shred of morals anywhere on either side, but then again, maybe I shouldn't be. A Dow futures down 202, so we dropped 200 in the Dow. Individual stocks, I've got the Apple down 358. We've been talking about Apple all morning. The stock that continues to absolutely amaze is 3M. If you think that this is one of the biggest manufacturers worldwide, which they are, these guys, I'm not a big chart guy, but these dudes were, $220, like not very long ago or something. I mean, I haven't seen a movement like that in a stock of this size in like really a long time. But, we'll have maybe John Neal talk about that. Well, as we do the rest of the world, they're over in Europe. Sinking here too. Now the DAX is down 1.2%, 143 points. FTSE down 39, that's 0.5. CAC round down 41.7. In Asia, Nikkei up 187, so the outlier this morning. Shanghai, however, down 73, that's 2.5%. This must have happened after the bullying behavior statement. Hang Seng down 328. Oil up a bunch. Not up as much as it was earlier, up 42 cents. We were up 60-some cents earlier. 63.29. Brent up 22. So these guys have actually come down. We've got gold only down 79 cents now. It was down like $2 earlier. Because dollar is going up. And stocks are going down. So usually when a dollar is down, gold goes up. So gold doesn't know if it's on foot or horseback right about now, Manny. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Temperatures continue to fall, but we're still dry this morning, and that's led to nice, easy roadways. No issues or accidents to report in the Chicagoland area anywhere. Not in the city, not in the suburbs, not on the expressways, not on the side streets. So we're off to a great start. Low travel times across the board, which is normal for a Friday, but usually starts to pick up by now. If rain should start falling, that'll probably slow things down, but everything else looking good. So enjoy a nice quiet commute as you're heading in this morning. Weather today, the temperatures, like I said, are falling. We were 75 degrees yesterday. Today, a high of just 52, which has come and gone. Right now it's 50, and we'll drop into the upper 40s with a chance of rain later on today. Lots of clouds. Then we warm back up to 81 tomorrow. So it's like it never happened. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 81. Right now it's mostly clear and 63. In sports, the White Sox are playing good ball of late. They've won 4 out of 5 after doubling up the Blue Jays last night 4-2. White Sox host Toronto later on tonight, weather permitting. Cubs dropped their first series in their last 10 series. They'd won or tied 10 straight series before falling to the Reds. Cubs blew a lead in the middle innings for the second straight game. Led 2-0 most of the way and then kind of fell apart. Then there was a 2-hour rain delay. And then the bullpen gave it away, and they lost to the Reds 4-2. Cubs are in Washington tonight to take on the Nationals. Diamondbacks were off yesterday. They'll host the San Francisco Giants later on tonight down in Phoenix. Lastly, the PGA Championship teed off yesterday, and Brooks Koepka got off to a roaring start. He shot a 7-under 63 and has a 3-shot lead after day one. Chief.
I have a question for you. Do we have John? How far away, since your friend, Jessica Mendoza was quizzing, Yelich, and she was asking because they played two games essentially in the rain here at Wrigley, they have this.
And the cold.
Yeah, they have this beautiful new, visitor's locker room, right? Allegedly?
It's still small compared to, the rest of baseball, but I guess it's much nicer now.
Where is it?
Where the old one was.
Well, I don't know, because she said how many...
No, I do know. It's where the old one was.
Okay, well, where's...
The old one...
Next question is, where was the old one?
You haven't been in it?
No.
Oh, okay.
What am I doing in a locker room?
Well, they give... As part of the Wrigley tour, I don't know if you've ever done that, but actually...
What part about I'm never going there again?
Well, I know, but it's been there for 100 years.
I thought maybe in the last 100 years you'd gone there.
I thought that they did it like underneath somewhere else and moved. Like the home locker room is now out underneath the,
because they made it way bigger. The visiting locker room was really small and leaky and gross, and you had to go through this long winding hallway to get there. But apparently it's still pretty much in the same spot. So it's still very small, but they just upgraded it completely. So it's much nicer. And then, you know, I think there's like a little private batting cage little area back there and stuff like that. But it's still a long walk to get there.
Well, that's what he said. She goes, how many times did you, he goes, you're just wet and cold. He goes, well, haven't you changed, how many times did you change your uniform? He says, I haven't, because it's too far to the locker room.
Yeah, it really is a long walk. And
that's why I asked, where is it? Is it all the way up by right field or where?
It's hard to tell where you're going because it's like this long winding hallway. And I've been in there a couple times. I went there once on a tour, and then I've been there probably 3 or 4 times when I was at the score, and I would go and cover the game occasionally. And it was just like this long, leaky hallway that was kind of dark and musty, and you're walking on like this AstroTurf.
I think that door out where the bullpen used to be goes right into it, so it must be all the way out there.
Yeah, I think it is. And it is a long walk. And it was really, really small. And the home clubhouse was close to the dugout, but it was also really small. And now they've just made that huge. And that's,
well, now
that's
it's underneath the, where everybody's playing in the grass outside, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
By
the way, Michael writes in, Maddie, great market observation. When I basically said the market's a complete joke and it's not real.
The markets that we
people of my whole life have told me the market's a real thing and the market overcomes everything. I think that's crap. And the more I learn about it, I think it's just fake.
It's different. When I traded in the OEX pit for 18 years. The OEX at the time was that pit was the second biggest exchange in the world. That pit. It's 400 people. It did more contracts than the rest of the CBOE combined. Did more contracts than the Amex, did more Pecos. The only exchange bigger than that pit was New York Stock Exchange. And when you went down there, it was really a treat to bring people from the outside world down there, because there was such a logic to it that that you don't have now. And people will tell me about electronic versus the other. First of all, there's a split, okay? You're never going to get me to agree that having runners for orders back and forth, even though some of them were very attractive, not that I noticed and I was a lot younger, that's the way to deliver orders anywhere. I mean, obviously it isn't. I mean, and the idea that I could put an order in here and have it pop up, even if the pit was still there, pop up on a computer in the pit and have somebody execute it is a hell of a lot better than me writing one up if I was at like a Deanwooder, dropping it off at the window, having somebody, you know, call it into New York, having them teletype it to the booth up in the back and some girl pull it off the teletype, write a real order up, handing it to a runner. I mean, obviously, nobody wants that again. I mean, even though it worked, okay, it's archaic. But the idea that in a pit somebody was paid to represent your order to get you, just let me explain just how it worked. Say a runner brought the order into the pit. You could actually have a group of 10 retail people standing there watching this happen. I mean, it wasn't a show. It was real. Somebody'd be in there, and Audrey was, a broker in Walmart, and she'd get an order from you, through PTI or somebody. And all of a sudden, a 5-lot would go out there, and she would know some PTI, she'd know some RBC, because that's our clearing firm, and she'll say, 40 calls. And somebody goes, 3 to 8. And everybody will. And if a guy was the first at 3 to 8, she goes, I got 5, how many went? And the guy will say, I'll take all 5, or I'll take 3, and give some, the schlump who was second, too. And so she, at that minute, is working for you. Her only job, she could not trade for her own account, was to execute your order and get the best price. Because if it was 3 to 1/4, somebody else came in with 5 to sell from another company, guess what? They would cross at 3 1/8, and everybody in the crowd would be shut out. Her job and the other person's job was to get your... Now we need to drop the brokerages. So we dropped the brokerage down to a spot where, okay, nobody makes any money on brokerage, say. So we cut Audrey out of the picture because we don't need her. So now what happens is the firm takes the order. Now the markets are 3 to 1/8. I'm using the old spreads because now they're decimals, I understand.
It's easier to explain, 3 to 1/8. Now, that firm sends that someplace who takes the 3 and 1/8. You never get something in the middle, okay? That would never happen. You're going to get the 3 and 1/8, and because you direct that to somebody, somebody now kicks back an order to the brokerage firm. So instead of having an open outcry where somebody actually tries, somebody whose job it is to get you the best price, now that person's job is to get themselves the biggest rebate, which is totally a kickback. It's totally, I mean, so the entire fabric, the entire ethics of the system is changed, even though it's faster and it's electronic and it's cheaper. Okay? So, but if you're somebody who cares about ethics, it's not theirs. But what the new wrinkle, Maddie, is even if you are a customer who's at 3 1/8, the firm can now trade it, an eighth is 12.50, right? 0.125. So, somebody now is going to be able to trade it at 0.124 and get ahead of you. So if you have your, if you put the order in, say the market's 3 to 1/4 and Audrey gets an order to sell it at 3 3/8. She's going to say, I don't want to hold this in case I might miss it. I'll put this in the customer order book. So there's this big book of all these customer orders, standing orders we call them. And that's what you're seeing now in the market. There's like none of those. So Audrey would put those in the book at 3 3/8. Now when it gets to 3 3/8, say it goes 3 to 1/4, 3 1/8, you get priority there now at 3 3/8. Nobody in the crowd can trade at 3 3/8 until you do. So you get priority, and if 50 of them trade, you might be the only person who gets any of them at 3 3/8. And the rest of the crowd is sitting there going, geez, I wish I could have sold some of those. But you couldn't. Okay? Now, because of the fact that they can nudge ahead of you by an increment that you can't match, it'll trade, you know, instead of 375, it'll trade 374, 374, 374. And when you finally get taken, it might be 3 1/2 bid because now it's a pigeon order. So people have figured out that it's no longer an advantage to leave. It used to be an advantage to have a standing order. Now it's a massive disadvantage. One of these idiots from China. Also, another thing is if you are sitting there and you go, somebody from, you know, Morgan Stanley, as much as I rag on these guys, they were pretty damn honest. They'd come in and they'd say, 50 calls. And Maddie Weber would say, 3 1/8. And they go, how many you got? I got 25. Well, I need to buy 200. Can I fill 200 at a half? And if the pit says yes, he's not going to trade with you at 3 3/8. He's going to say, let's do all 200 at a half. He's not going to roll over you. That was not done. But now, if you have that standing order, these guys have zero. And all of a sudden, China comes out and says, we have a deal, we don't have a deal. Well, your 10 lot there, it's $3, might be worth 10. But they're not going to take you out at 10 like they used to, because that's what they're paying for all the rest. They're going to run over you on the way. They're going to take your 3 and be 8 bid in a nanosecond. That never used to happen. I mean, there's no honor, there's nothing in this system. It's a stool without legs. And somehow our idiot regulators have been talked into saying that this is okay because it, quote, is cheaper. It's cheaper on the commission side, but it's not cheaper on the fill side. In the end of the day, you're worse off for it, in my opinion.
How could you possibly police that today?
What do you mean? First thing you would do
front running and any of that.
First thing you would do is say that whatever the increment is, say a penny, which it is, nobody can trade between the penny. That's the worst thing you do. Why do you need to trade between a penny? Well, I need to trade 999 to get ahead of somebody.
But what if they just did, you know, 2 pennies?
Well, I'm saying, but it's not what the increment is. You can't let somebody trade between the increment. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, how does that even begin to happen?
I have no idea. You're talking about a guy who was on a board for 6 years. I have no idea whose idea that was and how anybody was allowed to do it. I have no idea. The increment was the increment. So right now, you're going to get priority at 2 cents, but so what? All the other guys can trade it at 1999. So that, and you can't lower yours to 1999 because the increment's a penny. And, I mean, who on your SEC board, or who in any of these places would sit there and say, wait a minute, wait a minute, what are you guys doing? The increment's down to a penny, and you guys get to trade between the penny? The first thing I would do is stop that, and then. After a year, see if that helped things at all. I think it would help things a lot. I'd probably have to go further, but that would be number one. Get you back to get your priority.
Sparky134 on Twitter says, the alternative trading systems have jacked up the market, not regulated, and no transparency.
It's exactly right.
When I was a ute in I'm going to be a little gross here, unfortunately. When I was a ute, it used to be, I mean, the people at the University of Chicago, the you know, the big competitive things. Because what ends up happening, Manny, is any business you're in. I mean, that's why I'm more attuned to this, I think, than like maybe a lot of the listeners, and maybe that's why a lot of them like listening, because there's a history to what I talk about. The New York Stock Exchange, there used to be a bunch of guys that traded stock essentially on the street. And the MX was actually called the Curb Exchange because guys would line up on the curb. You had your spot on the curb. That's why it was called the Curb Exchange, and they moved indoors. It was probably a lot easier when it rained, right? And I think the New York Stock Exchange started under the buttonwood tree, right? I think the tree might still be there. But so guys would do this stuff, and as you went in, you really don't want all this competition. In every exchange you're in, you could just see over a period of time the competition get less and less. And usually it was bodies. Now, when I joined the CBOE, there were 125 stocks. There were 935 members, plus another 200 or 300 guys that had brown badges that came over from the Midwest Options Exchange. So essentially you had 1,250 bodies trading 125 stocks. When I left, there was 1,000 stocks, and the OEX would siphon off 400 of those people, and not one more body. Matter of fact, the Midwest people went the way of the dodo bird. So, I mean, there used to be like 20 people in a trading crowd competing, and it got down to 3. There's no competition there. I mean, at some point you might get a little bit, but not very much. And it got to the point where in the New York Stock Exchange, there were no competing market makers. There was one specialist for every stock, for every 5 stocks. He made, so there was no competition there. There was brokers and one specialist. Only one guy got to trade IBM. So left to anybody's own devices. I mean, you would have thought that when the CBOE started, and the SEC would have said, oh, you guys think you need 900 people for 125 stocks. About every time you add a stock, you got to add another body. Something simple like that, right? Something that would bring like a little bit of logic to the system, not 10 bodies, but how about one? You know, the OEX sucked 350 people off the rest of the floor. There never was another badge. It just meant every other crowd on the floor, instead of having 10 people in, had 4. So it left to your own devices. People always say, I mean, the competition, I don't need those guys. Do you think the guy who runs Citadel thinks we need 50 market makers on the floor competing with him? What do you mean? I do a great job. What are you talking about? It's deep and liquid. What do you want to do? I'll do it. Those are good markets. But what if they were better? Well, then we don't want those guys in there. I mean, this is the way people are. I mean, do you think if you and I owned a saloon, our best day is somebody opened up a saloon across the street? Right? I mean, a lot of what you're talking about is just natural. So now, right now, there is no such thing as a standing order anywhere. There are standing orders, okay? But usually they're for people who, like, we use them a lot, all right? Now, when we say it's standing order, say, for instance, I'm long some puts against somebody's stock. So essentially I'm protected. So say it's XYZ. I've got the stock at 60. I've got the 60 puts. Well, if the stock runs down to 57, I might say, okay, JD, let's put an order in. Let's buy the 57 puts, sell the 60 puts, because obviously I would like to adjust, get a little longer down here because the stock's down. But I'm still going to have my puts. Let's see if we can do that spread for $1.75. Now, that's an order that we'll put in there, okay? That's a spread order. It doesn't move very much. And when somebody grabs it, they grab it. I don't want to do it at 150. I'm certainly not going to put a market order in for a spread and get butchered on that. So, I mean, you know, to be perfectly blunt, we know what we're doing. And on that kind of order, you're going to put a limit order in for a spread at $1.75. If we get it, we get it. If we don't, we don't. If it looks like it's really close, I might say, hey, you know what? Let's be charitable today. Let's do 173 and maybe somebody will grab it. But we're totally in control. And we'll, oh, by the way, we've already got the put, so I'm not panicking at all. All right. Same way, if, for instance, and I'm not, you know, saying anybody should do this or not, but say, for instance, last night you were to buy, I'm looking at the straddle and the spiders. Last night, spiders trading now, 285.50 this morning down 220. So let's look at the 88 straddle was roughly $2. Now, if I was a buyer at that straddle last night and I see the spiders down 222 this morning, I could be a buyer of spiders this morning because I'm covered by the puts. So I can buy them here, but I'm not naked. okay? I'm not naked at all. I'm covered by these puts. So what I'm trying to do is say, okay, what if this is as low as we're going to go? Who knows if it is or isn't? I have no idea. Say, now, if I buy those down there, guess what? I've made money on my straddle because I bought it at $2 and I just bought these things at 212 below the strike. So if you do the math, I'm already up 12 cents. But now if these things run up to unchanged today, which we've seen happen like every day, and I sell them, okay, now I've made my $2 and I still got my straddle. But so I'm going to be the guy who's going to be in there buying and selling here because I already have my protection. The thought that I would just go in with customer money and buy the straddle down here thinking it's a bottom because guess what, I'm so smart, that's never going to happen, man. I mean, there's no way I'm doing that. I mean, unless I'm already covered somewhere else. Because, I mean, how hard is it for you to, if you sit there and go, well, the spoos are down 10, what, they're down, I think I'll buy two of them. So you buy two of them and the next bleep is down 30. You're sitting there going, wait a minute, what's 20 points times $250 a point times two? Ouch! That's going to leave a mark. Right. And so then you sell your two and guess what? It's back up and up. Unless you have something behind you, you can't be the guy who's doing this buying and selling here. If it isn't, you can see why. And if they ask you right now, the futures are trading, E-minis are trading 28.58. Manny, where are you a bidder? Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not at 28.58. Maybe I'm at 28.40 or 28.45, hoping that if it's down that low, maybe it'll bounce back, but maybe it won't. Maybe it'll bounce back and you'll be a hero. Maybe it'll throw your bid like dinner through a goose. You don't know. If you don't have anything behind you, like an option contract protecting you, I can see why these markets are this wide. I wouldn't want to do it, would you?
No.
When every little, I mean, it used to be that you had earnings you could prepare for. You always had, some sort of stuff out of the Fed. Matter of fact, there were days when the Fed would lower the discount rate, like during the trading day. They didn't do it, in these anticipated meetings. So that would always be a problem, okay, or not. You caught long or short, it goes one way or the other. You're either a genius or you had a bad day based on something you didn't even do. You just caught long or caught short. I mean, there always was random shocks to the market. But I've never seen a, quote, deal like this. This is, what are we pushing, 6 months on this deal?
At least. Yeah.
And what, every other day there's some iteration out of some place. Oh, it's on again, it's off again, oh, we're doing good, we're not doing good. Or in the morning, God, this deal sucks, in the afternoon, Larry Kudlow, what do you mean? Did we say it sucked this morning? That was wrong, it really doesn't suck, we're doing great. I mean, I've on the same subject for this length of time, I've never seen anything like this. I mean, I can't imagine being any longer, can you?
No. How about the shift in, they're the ones paying the majority, and then it went, well, we're paying some too. And regarding the tariffs, that whole narrative has changed too.
Well, how can anybody, if you sit down with anybody, I mean, Audrey's, got a lot of friends, and these, I'm not criticizing, these people have, I use the term regular jobs. Their job isn't my job to manage people's money, to try and protect them, by the way, to watch all the news and watch all the crap that could possibly impact their money while they're off doing other stuff.
And to talk about it for 2 hours every day.
Yeah, we talk about it. But they're out being doctors, lawyers, whatever it is they do. So, I mean, they can't be doing this. Just like I will hire them to be a lawyer, they'll hire me to do this. It's like the paint guy out in Hobart Glen. I walked in. He'd been to one of my seminars. Audrey was doing something at some office out there, so I wanted him to paint thing because I like to remodel stuff. And he looks at me, hey, chief, how are you? And I'm looking at him going, he goes, I'm one of your clients. He goes, oh, yeah. It's hard to remember everybody. And so he started talking. He goes, hey, how about if we make this deal? I go, what's the deal? He goes, you don't try and paint, and I don't try and manage my money. I'm a little more onto this than most. I just can't believe the amount of advice out there telling people either to be long or short or don't worry about this. Or how do you tell anybody with Apple right now, caught in the crosshairs here, how do you tell them not to worry? I mean, you don't want to give them a specific trade. I certainly would never do it on the air, but how do you not be worried? I mean, good Lord. I don't even have the stock and I'm worried about it. What if China turns around and does the same thing to them? I don't think they will. SP futures now down 21.25. NASDAQ futures down 77. Be back Monday. Stacks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.